Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life. The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. I have no idea what to say to you. It can't be Shavuot Tov, it can't be, I don't know what it is, because at the end of this call we're going to say Shabbat Shalom. So
we
I don't know.
We'll just say Boker Tov, right?
Yeah, let's just go with Boker Tov because I'm so confused.
Let's just go with Boker Tov. I hope everybody had a good hug and we're back. This is now when the serious business begins. And I wanted to just start with opening up a little discussion about this issue of impossible pork. I don't know if you guys have spoken about it.
No, what's impossible pork?
But Impossible Foods, that's the company that came up with the Impossible Burger, which is this plant-based kind of meat thing, which took the Jewish world by storm because everybody's eating cheese Impossible Burgers and it's kosher and everybody's excited about that. And then Impossible Foods have done the next thing, taken it to the next step. And they're producing Impossible Pork, also plant-based. No reason why it shouldn't be kosher at all. It's all includes ingredients which are all kosher, which has been acknowledged, except for the fact that it's not going to be kosher.
What?
And the reason that it's not going to be kosher is because there is a concern by the Kashrut authorities, the Orthodox Union in the United States, that there might be what they call marit ayin, that people might be fooled, might be taken in, thinking that you're eating something which is not kosher because it's called pork. And according to the Kashrut authorities, the Orthodox Union, we didn't give it an OU, which is the Kashrut mark from the Orthodox Union, not because it wasn't kosher per se, said Rabbi Menachem Genach. It may indeed be completely kosher in terms of its ingredients. If it's plant-derived, it's kosher. Just in terms of sensitivities to the consumer, it didn't get it. So what do people think about that?
I'd love your thoughts on 34519 or 0618951019. Do you agree with that ruling? I'd love your thoughts. Fascinating indeed. There's also been mixed reactions to Prime Minister Naftali Bennett's maiden address at the United Nations General Assembly meeting on Monday. What was the assessment of his address?
Well, I think there's such a lot to be discussed about his address to the United Nations. The address that he made was first thing in the morning, New York time, 9 o'clock, in order to allow him to make that address before the onset of the Chag in Israel and other parts of the world, which of course allowed all of us to watch live on TV. The hall was pretty empty, I have to say. I'm not quite sure if it was because of the fact that it was 9 o'clock in the morning, or whether it was simply because of social distancing rules that were going on at the United Nations anyway, but the place did look a little deserted. The whole presentation style reminded me very much of what we had become accustomed to seeing from former Prime Minister Netanyahu. That was certainly a point that was raised in a number of places in the press. We'd been warned that it was going to be different, it was going to be grown up, it was going to be without all the props. And yet it had a similar look and feel about it very much. The word Palestinians and Palestine and Palestinian Authority wasn't mentioned anywhere as promised. But, you know, there were some people who took offense to the fact that he didn't seem to give enough credit to the medical staff where he spoke about the coronavirus pandemic and the way that Israel had been dealing with coronavirus, and there was certainly a little bit of a storm in a teacup about that. But I think that most of the discussion that went on was really about what went down after the assembly presentation, the fact that the Prime Minister had to remain in New York for a Shmini Atzeret, which of course was the first day of the Chag outside of Israel, and apparently he visited the old shul that he used to attend on the Upper East Side, went back there this time as Prime Minister rather than as a regular Israeli living and working in New York, as was the case when he previously attended the shul, and he apparently made an address, and he made an address, gave a Dvar Torah at the shul, and then he walked back to his hotel, accompanied by his entourage. Of course, he's observant and he wouldn't drive on the Chag, and he walked back, and that apparently raised some interest passed by the police down Fifth Avenue as he walked back to his hotel. And then, of course, as soon as the first day was over and the rest of New York were going into the second day of Chag Simchat Torah, Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, I'm making a mistake, Howard now, Prime Minister Naftali Bennett was back on the plane, coming back to Israel, which of course is also slightly controversial, seeing as it's still Chag for the Jewish community in the United States, where he was at the time. I'm not quite sure if anybody else had the opportunity to see his address. The only thing that I would say about his address is, of course, the word Iran was mentioned many times, and he did very much emphasize the threat that Iran presents to Israel and asking for action rather than simply words. But my question about these addresses at the United Nations in general, and in particular our Prime Minister's address, is what do we honestly expect will come of this? I know it's nice to stand up in the public and to make this address and to be a proud Prime Minister of Israel and to present words of Torah to the general public. We are very proud to be Jewish in a non-Jewish world, and we stand up proudly and announce that. And, you know, we take our place amongst the community of nations. All of that is well understood, agreed, and very much respected. But beyond that, what do we really expect to get to receive to happen after that address? What is the whole purpose of this?
And I guess the other question is, who is he talking to? Was he talking to Israel and the Jewish world, or was he talking to the United Nations, which is inherently, of course, as you've mentioned, a non-Jewish world? You know, and that's also important to establish. What would, you know, it's a question I always ask when we look at any form of campaign, is what does success look like? Going into this address, what would success have looked like for this address?
Right. And it's hard to know, because I think that every statement that he made was potentially addressed at a different audience. I think when it comes to talking about Iran, he's really addressing perhaps the Iranian regime and potentially the P5+1 nations, the world, those countries who entered into this agreement, the nuclear agreement with Iran. When he's talking about the coronavirus pandemic, I'm guessing he's talking to the Israeli public more than anything else to try and reinforce. I think that every comment was probably addressed to a different audience. And to be fair, I'm not sure that he honestly sat down and thought about who he was really talking to when, you know, putting the whole speech together. Apparently he was very much personally involved in constructing the words, even though he did get help from speechwriters and other philosophers and people around, but apparently he was very much personally involved in constructing the speech. So he did his bit. He stood up. He was, you know, very much, I think he did us proud. I think, you know, we felt good about him being there. But in terms of what he said and what we expect to come of it, I'm not really sure what the expectations are.
Perhaps it was also, Naftali Bennett was painted very much, and he in fact was a right-wing politician, which in the world that we live makes people very nervous. Perhaps the whole goal here is to show that here is a man of thought and reason and not necessarily a radical mad person.
Yeah, I mean, I would just wonder whether this is not really about him, a personal thing about himself, and presenting himself on the world stage to show
that's
that he
kind of what
can,
I mean.
You know, yeah, that he has a place on the world stage, that he is justified as having been elected as the Prime Minister of Israel, and that he can stand up along with all the other international leaders, and that there is, you know, justification that he has a full right to be able to do so and to prove that. And of course, the fact that he stood there with his kippah, the first religiously observant prime minister of Israel to go into a public area like that with his kippah on and make his address also was a statement, I think.
Absolutely. No doubt about that. There have been ongoing clashes between Palestinians and Israeli security forces around the area of Jenin. What are the details of some of these clashes?
So Jenin has really been a hotbed, particularly in the last few weeks, because the Israeli security forces have had this ongoing operation to try to clean out Hamas operatives and also weapon storage that is believed to have been collected up in the area of Jenin. Obviously, there's been a lot of intelligence to support this, and we spoke on Monday about clashes that had taken place over the weekend and injuries to Israeli soldiers and indeed people who'd been killed in those clashes as Israeli border police and soldiers had tried to arrest suspects and locate weapons, which had been based on the Shin Bet intelligence work. Last night, again, clashes broke out. This time, apparently Israeli security forces were fired upon in the village of Burkin, which is near Jenin in the West Bank. And the report suggests that not only was one Palestinian actually killed, but that two others were reportedly injured in these clashes. And it seems as if though these operatives who the Israeli the security forces are trying to collect up are ready and are really very, very active in this area. So I think that the security operation to try to clean this out and to prevent the collection of arms storage in that area and also to prevent the operatives from gaining any permanent establishment around that area will continue. Obviously, lots of intelligence, and this is backed up by IDF and border police activities. There has been, you know, live fire and lots of issues, and I suspect that this is going to be at least ongoing in the foreseeable future until such time as the security forces are satisfied that whatever risk is presented by the establishment that's been made in that area has been reduced. I think that these clashes are going to be ongoing, so we will be watching the situation quite carefully.
No doubt about that. 1 million Israelis are due to lose their green card status as the rules change starting next week. Oh boy, now what?
Yeah, so, you know, this, the coronavirus cabinet hasn't met for the last month and is due to meet again on Sunday after the holiday period. And in the meantime, school children have returned today to school after the Sukkot holiday. The official school year started on the 1st of September, but in reality, there haven't been very many school days up until now. Now, I think, is when things really begin. All parents have been asked to have their children tested with antigen tests at home before allowing them to return to school. But the big story really is about the change of rules of the green card system. When Israelis were given the second dose of the vaccine, then those people who'd received two doses were given a green card, which was valid until the end of 2021, so until the end of this year. Then when the government decided to roll out the booster jab, the decision was made to revoke those green card that green card validity from the end of the year and to change the rules, and the rules start on Sunday. And the current rules say that if you effectively have had a vaccination of any type in the last 6 months, then you are entitled to get a green card. So that effectively in most case means that people need to be vaccinated with a third dose of the booster vaccine in order to have a valid green card, or at least have had a second vaccination within the last 6 months. And there's also special rules about people who have recovered from COVID. So those people who have been ill with COVID and who have had one vaccination in the last 6 months are also exempt and then will be required, then will be entitled to this green pass that the government has rolled out. The issue is that if you don't have a green pass and you're a teacher, you are not allowed to teach. And if you are a health worker and you don't have a green pass, you are not allowed to go to work. And that is something which is being rolled out across all places where people work with the general public. And the education ministry has estimated that something like 50% of teachers, 50% of teachers do not yet meet the green pass requirements.
Wow, now, that's a staggering number.
That is a staggering number. And there are apparently 300 teachers and other educational staff who simply refuse to be vaccinated or tested and therefore will be staying at home. So one thing I didn't mention is that if you don't meet the green pass requirement through your vaccination, then you will need to be tested twice a week. And if you agree to be tested twice a week, then you will be entitled to go to work and to fulfill your duties. That is okay, as long as you continue to be tested twice a week every week. Obviously, the much easier route is to simply have a vaccination, but there are those people who, for whatever reason, are refusing or don't wish to or feel that they can't for reasons of their own. But this is going to really put the cat amongst the pigeons, I think, because there are so many people who still don't meet the green pass requirements and the rules come into effect on Sunday. It's going to be interesting to see exactly what goes on in the Israeli economy on Sunday, because employers are obliged to make sure that people who come to work are all up to the standard and that they fulfill the requirement of the green pass. Not only public workers, but also people who work in the gyms and people who work in restaurants and also people who visit these places are going to be required to be up to the green pass standard. So we will watch on Sunday very carefully to see how things change.